Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Secret Museum of the Air, a weekly broadcast of the world's music, historic landmarks from the dawn of recording through the golden age of the gramophone. Join us for the next hour as your host, Citizen Kafka, visits with curator Pat Conti in the Secret Museum.
Good evening. Welcome to the Secret Museum of the Air. This is Pat Conti for Citizen Kafka. On tonight's broadcast, the roots of Afropop, or at least some of them, and we're going to have a lot of fun tonight with some old favorites and some new favorites. I'm sure they'll all be your favorites once you hear them. This program, the Secret Museum of the Air, brought to you every week. Without further ado, let's talk about some of the music we just heard. That was the Penny Whistle Blues by Willard Sele. And that has to be the beginning of an era, the era of Kwela, as recorded by the Gallo Brothers in South Africa back in the 1950s. It's actually some music that had been around before. It's street music, Kwela led by the flageolet, the penny whistle, and you would hear on street corners, eventually made its way from the 40s into the 50s on records. And that one, originally on Gallotone, became a bestseller for the London label, so it actually leached out into the British Empire and, of course, America, where it was a minor hit. But let's move on to some more Kwela. This is the real proto-Kwela music that we're listening to. Fans of the Sandy Becker Show might remember the, I think it was the Swingin' Safari, that was his theme, from Billy Vaughan, and that just gives you kind of an idea of this music and how it did actually have an impact on even American pop music. We'll hear from Elias and his Zigzag Flutes and something called Tom Hark. This was another big seller, I believe, for London at about 1955 when this music was really peaking. It was a prime part of music that you would hear in stage productions like King Kong, the jazz opera from Johannesburg. From there, Ben Nkosi and his double flutes. We'll hear a double penny whistle piece, the 2-1 Special. This recorded again in the 1950s for the HMV label. The third one is by another really famous name in the music. His name is Spokes Mashianye, and he recorded for New Sound, the New Sound label in the 50s, and had many versions of his own group. which even crossed over into the Newport years in the mid-60s, where he was brought over, I believe, in 65 or 1966 with his brand of really swinging Kwela. We'll hear Bojuang Jawala. And last, we'll hear from a group called the Black Mambazo, not to be confused with the Reverend Joseph Shabalala's group, but it's one that I believe he borrowed the name from. They were not necessarily a Kwela band per se, but incorporated a lot of the Kwela elements, including some more uptown jive, the real township jive, and I think there's a goat singer on this one, so it makes it even more of a treat. The piece is called Bavu, as it was recorded for Columbia in the 1950s. So let's start right away with Elias and his zigzag flutes, Tom Hark.
Jelamud me thought sight, Eggers of Buddha 2-1 special. Thank you.
tshwane tlhola e tlhabane ya sudusa o bantwa ka mangwena rane kwa bakwena tshwara thebe dira senate wa bona fatsheleaya diatla dimora makgobale go eteolo tse bale a letsweng batho ba majore le tsadisa tswata batho
ya le pepeni ka khirisha tika hi tikuri ma black mambazi na ma dark seed sisters ba fikile ka fiwa
Sound of the Black Mambazo, the Black Axe, recorded for Columbia. Not Ladysmith Black Mambazo, but from a time when Ladysmith was just an idea beginning to formulate by Reverend Shabalala, and he actually borrowed the name, and I think it was okay with them. Before that, Spokes, and his record for New Sound, Bojoang Joala, Ben Nkosi, who went on to be a great producer of music from South Africa, a well-known name, and his 2-1 special for HMV. And we started with one of the hits, actually maybe the hit that started it all big time, although you might not know it, Tom Hark. That was the name of the piece. For our next set, we're going to stay in South Africa, rich country for music, and this set dedicated to one of the most important records to come out of Africa in the 20th century, I do believe. At least I feel that way. It's called Imbube, or Lion, and it's something that we can't get enough of. We play it often, and we get requests to play it often. But tonight we'll be looking at it in some detail for this next set. We've managed to locate an alternate take, actually alternate to an alternate, and we will really get a glimpse at the formation of one of the great ethnic records of all time. It's a record that sparked a whole movement in singing when Iskatameya became something called Imbube Singing, named right after this record. The group is Solomon Linda and his Evening Songbirds, or Durban Evening Songbirds. For 10 years, this record really fueled an industry. It became such a hit that not only was it covered by many South African artists, it became a pan-African phenomenon. When it was picked up in the United States by Gordon Jenkins, the great arranger, who was sort of a watered-down Ferdy Grofe, but his collaboration with the Weavers brought us something that we all know as Wimawe. And when that became widespread in the folk movement in the United States, it actually went back to Africa in that form. And Wimawe on the Decca label sold well, even 10 years after Linda's record. Incidentally, the session that we'll be listening to took place in 1938, and the record, I think, issued in 1939. It's based, as members of the band recalled, Linda based it on a wedding song heard by some girl singing in a gathering, I believe a Zulu wedding, sort of on the outskirts of the activity. And he combined it with some poetry that he wrote, commemorating the killing of a young lion cub, something that the herd boys took great pride in at that time, although it sounds horrible today. But the killing of a lion was really something to praise in song. The words are something to the effect of, "The lion is asleep. Blessed be he, the lion." And the young herd boy Linda, when he was a man, formed this group. Eventually got to work, actually, as a packer for one of the record companies. That's how he was discovered and brought to the Gallo microphones to record this song. By the late 1950s, it was reborn again. That version of Wimawe that everyone knows that fueled a folk revival, in part, was captured by some young rock and rollers called the Tokens, who brought us the song "The Lion Sleeps Tonight." And I do believe they claim that they knew nothing of the words or the actual poetry of the original and sort of came up with that. That's quite a coincidence, but it gave the song Imbube even some more life that fueled it through another decade, covered by Miriam Makeba and all the way to Robert John, and I think lately it's R.E.M. So we are going to hear the evolution of this improvised piece, basically an improvised piece, in 3 takes. The first 2 will be a cappella. We'll hear them a little out of order and building, I think, in a dramatic way to the actually what is the first take. So we're toying with the history here just a little bit. Will you hear the accompaniment on the hit that really everyone knows with piano and banjo accompaniment? That turns out to be take 1. Linda probably liked it well enough but wanted to try another take. And I can imagine him saying, "Well, let's try another pass, a cappella this time, the way we would sing it at the hostel, the way we would sing it in competition, and the way that earns us the loving cup every time we do sing in competition." In take 3, he steps it up a bit, and again, another set of improvisations still built on that original tune. And then we finally hear the finished version, The Great Imbube, as it was first released in 1939 on the Gallatone label, or actually the Singer label at that time. So let's listen now to The Lion is Asleep, again one of the great records of our time, by Solomon Linda and his Evening Songbirds.
Bimbo,
Asleep. Thank you, Solomon Linda, for the miraculous piece of music. We move now to Nigeria, and we'll be listening to a Jubilee anthem, this composed for an African communion. It's to set off the next set of the roots of Juju music, believe it or not, which had a lot to do with the early Aladura churches. This is part two of an anthem which will be performed with organ by the UAM Church Choir at Lagos. And I believe this is a Methodist choir. And only one of the elements that go into the backgrounds of Juju. This recording, probably from the late 1920s, is only part of the brew, which we will complement, hopefully, by the next cut, which will feature some Hawaiian guitar, the telltale sound of that hexagonal hand drum or tambourine, really, and a whistle here in a much different setting from Kwela. And the piece Olowo Lo Obiria Mo. This recorded for the Parlophone label in 1932 by the Jolly Orchestra. These are names that people, most folks, only get to read about. And here is their music, and beautiful music it is. This is the real turning point where Juju is beginning to be a real viable, identifiable label for a type of music now sprouting about and had been around for some decades in some form. But now it's really gelling by the early 1930s. The most famous name, or one of the more famous names in the 78 era, is Ike Dairo. And with his group, the Blue Spots, we'll hear Ore Odali, as they recorded for Decca, this in Yoruba language. And this is one of the first times where you actually see Juju written on the label. Again, heavy on the guitar here, and now the style really gelling, kind of setting the pace, and you might be able to really begin to recognize some of the elements that go into something like the music of King Sonny Ade. He performed everything from calypsos to a native form of blues that has really very little to do with our country blues, but some heavy finger picking and some really nice guitar work. So we start in Lagos in 1932, or thereabouts actually, for the Parlophone label, the UAM Church Choir, and their African Communion.
Money, money.
K. Dairo in his Blue Spots, or Dairo, one of the first Juju records, one of the first to say so anyway. Before that, the Jolly Orchestra, a legendary session that took place in Lagos, and the Jubilee Anthem by the UAM Church Choir. Some of the roots of Juju. About all we can handle in the short hour that we have here at the Secret Museum. We being Citizen Kafka and myself, Pat Conti, the Secret Museum of the Air. And we are in the midst of actually coming up on our last set of music tonight in the roots of Afropop. And we wanted to at least touch on one more element, and that being some highlife. And some real proto-highlife here by Kwesi Agyeman's singing band. The singing band phenomenon, really, something from the 20s and the formative years of highlife. This is actually Ashanti music from Ghana, which will feature accordion and a metal sort of triangle. And another parlophone recording, this from the 1920s, something that crossed over into the next decade as the style began to emerge, again borrowing, like Juju, from all sorts of elements, Latin music and calypsos, of course, American country music. From there, we go to E.K.'s band, which is masking the name of E.K. Niami. And this is sung in the Twi language. It's called Tete Kwashi, or Kwashie, actually, Tete Kwashie. This recorded for the Decca label in the 1930s, or actually in the 1940s. Here with the High Life sound, more, let's say, more exacting, more upfront with the guitar, much like the juju guitarists of the time. We follow that with another piece by EK's band. We just can't get enough of them. It's great music. This is a tough one. Na Niina Be Tuamo Ako, again for the Decca label, and this strangely not labeled a blues as the other one was. This labeled simply as High Life, and that's one of the early uses again. And we're speaking strictly in terms of labeling and marketing of these early records from Africa of the term High Life. And we finish up with a Fanti song. We've examined at least three language groups here. The piece is called Obra, and it's performed by a group that had a long recording life, this one beginning in probably the late 1940s or early 1950s. It's the Stargazers of Kumasi, Kumasi being a great center of high life. And we think that after you hear these four cuts together, you'll hear some sort of progression leading up into some of the more familiar elements. But here is some of the background, beginning in the 1920s, with the singing band led by Kwesi Agyeman.
Yeah.
Stargazers of Kumasi, Obra, recorded for the Decca Company. Before that, Twami Ako by Ike's band, and Ike's band before that again, Tete Kwashi, starting with Kwesi Agyeman Singing Band back in the 1920s. Some of the roots of high life here, and that's what we do on this program, some of the roots of everything here at the Secret Museum. With Citizen Kafka at the controls, and for tonight, I'm your host, Pat Conti. We bid you adieu, with more to come each and every week. Farewell for tonight.
And so the gate swings shut after another visit to the Secret Museum comes to a close. We hope you have enjoyed this brief journey spanning the first half century of recorded sounds across the earth. Until next time, I'm Buddy Fortune for the Secret Museum of the Air.
This is Citizen Kafka. The Secret Museum of the Air is funded in part by a grant from the Shira Kober Zeller Foundation in loving memory of Arthur and Margaret Kober. For more information about the Secret Museum of the Air, write Secret Museum, Post Office Box 23075, Brooklyn, New York, 11202, 3075. That's Secret Museum of the Air, Post Office Box 23075, Brooklyn, New York, 11202, 3075. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again here at the Secret Museum of the Air.